This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay. So, this fellow called me up and told me this is true. It's true that he called me up. What he said is true. He said that he had a very big problem. I asked him what his problem is. He told me that his mother-in-law's name is Irma and his father-in-law's name is Harvey. And that, like, the family's, like, really getting it from everyone. And he said every time they, you know, his mother-in-law, Bichlal, he said, who happens to be a very nice lady. He told me she's a Category 5 mother-in-law. And he said every time they get on the radio and you hear them saying an historic, devastating monster named Irma is approaching, and everyone turns toward her, and Harvey nods, it gets very complicated. We okay there? Yeah, okay. The MS is what's interesting is there's a lot of psychology in the fact that storms are named after people. As a matter of fact, they used to only be named after ladies, and then they called Grachka and they stole the stuff. Name of the person, because then they can end as if I'm angry at Irma or I'm angry at Harvey or Betty. They know that it has absolutely no connection and shaychus to the hurricane. So, again, not to make light of the many people in harm's way, our tefillahs, our prayers for everyone, or those are going to be stuck on roads on, you know, Erev Shabbos. But the point being, you're not really angry at Irma, because Irma is not a Baal Bechira. Right? It's not really Irma's fault that there's a hurricane, and it's not Harvey's fault that there's a hurricane. But imagine for a moment that in the real Irmas in your life, and in the real Harveys in your life, you say the same thing. Whatever is shared to happen has happened. I'm not angry at them. You're not the one that are supposed to be caught. The world is your life. Living. You tell me what should I do? He's hard of hearing and he just turns it on very, very loud. So my position was, well then, tell the nurse, I'm very sorry, you can't live this way. They can lower. I'm sitting here for a few minutes, my ears are popping. I don't understand. He's 92 years old and he's hard of hearing. And he lives with such a simchas hachayim. He's mamish conducting the choir. I can't make it lower. So I said, I respectfully disagree with you. You know, people have to live with each other. They have to connect. And somehow, is a step ahead of me. So, I'm driving to yeshiva. And and as I'm pulling into the gas station, there's a figure. Figure it's a good time to fill up on gas, but you never know what's going to happen. And of course, I get a call, and I can't get this person. Whatever it is. Yeah, my email address, right. And I'm like, so I turn the Bluetooth, like the on to the loudest. And it's like blaring across the whole gas station. And it really works, because I'm pumping gas in the back of the car. And I'm saying, whatever you say. And someone comes over and really gives it to me. He says, you know, there are other people around here. They weren't sleeping. They're in a gas station. So I'm not sure exactly. And it's raining outside. But I said, okay, Rav Anshulam. So in other words, you're judging me the way I'm judging others, right? I couldn't see his need to have the music louder. So someone comes over to me and says the same thing. Who orchestrates this? We have to listen. Listen to Hashgacha. Listen to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us. And the more during the month of El specifically, the more we focus on this, that our lives are in the hands of Hashgacha. It doesn't make a difference what happens. Somebody was just telling me that in England today, there was an explosion in a car from an air freshener. Did you see the story? Hilly. Apparently somebody was smoking and somehow the compressor or whatever it was coming out of a simple air freshener, somehow it didn't, and there was this explosion. Yeah. You heard the story?
I can see it happen.
How many times does that happen, Maishi? It's a chemical reaction? When you smoke in a car, there's an air freshener. Yeah.
Once spread the bottle.
Right.
The gas that comes out.
Right. So whatever the scientific reason is, now just imagine, I have no idea, just imagine this guy sitting in his car and he goes, those poor people in Miami, why a hurricane could get them at any moment, takes a whiff of smoke and kaboom, his air freshener blows the roof off his car. I'm saying, you're worried about the people in Miami? But the idea is that this is our nisayon in life. We're threatened by a hurricane. No, you're not. It's whatever Hashgacha is. Because if Hashgacha says you're going to be threatened, you're going to be threatened by an air freshener. And if Hashgacha says you're saved, then you're not threatened by a hurricane. Now that doesn't mean that you don't evacuate by a hurricane. We do normal ishtadlis. But deep, deep within our hearts, the focus has to be again and again, Baruch HaLelam, we're in your hands. So Rav Noach Weinberg, Zechut Tzadik L'Vracha, is speaking to a group of Rashi Yeshiva and Rebbes and very Chashuva people. And he says something that only Rav Noach is going to say. He says, who in the last 100 years, who's the reason that you're still around? Who is the reason that we are still a people? That there's a Klal Yisrael today, that there's a Torah today? Who? Who's Chos? In whose Chos? I'm going to say, my grandfather was a Sheshkulev Rebbe. My grandfather was a Rosh Hashiva. You know, he goes, none of your grandfathers and none of your Zaydas. Yeah, get all the Chashuvim of Klal Yisrael sitting over here. I'm sure what he meant was not only your grandfathers and Zaydas. So someone says to Rav Noach, who's this person? He says, a person who couldn't even learn a Blat Gemara. Oh, now this is getting more controversial. And finally they pressure him. And he says, her name was Sarah Shanira. Sarah Shanira, the word Shanira comes from, I think, from the word seamstress, I believe. Shanira is like a, let's see. Sarah Shanira had a little seamstress shop, and she would sew scraps of clothing together. She had this idea. She took ripped clothing, cut off a sleeve from one dress, you know, a collar from a different dress, and put it together. And the poor people, the poor kids used to come because suddenly, due to her innovation, they had a complete dress. And she would say, as she would dress them, she would begin to think and say, I'm doing so much for their guf. What about for their neshamas? What's inside their clothes? And the rest is history. You know what went on before the war, especially in Poland? World girls were public schools. What about public schools? They were public schools. And you had a strong Polish, loyalty to the Polish government, and the Jews were kind of caught in between. and girls had to go to school, and there was no such a animal as a girl's school. Everybody, and it was ain bias, a ain shameis. People say it's a new phenomenon, people going off the derech. It was a horror story in Galicia and Poland. My mother, Lashlom son, she went to public school. And how many people tried to convince her, like, what are you doing? Where are you going? And she didn't have a strong enough home to overcome it. So Friday night, you know, the husband was in the boys went to the shtiebel to learn. You know, and the father dozed off because he worked 16 hours a day. And the girl went off to her friends. Who are those friends? Try to understand the Polish mentality at that given moment. The story I've said many times, I've been seeing of Babov, that a man came to him and said he had a printing press, and he would cover the printing presses at night with a blanket that had the Polish eagle on it, just as a covet. And once an inspector came by, and to his mazel, he tripped over it, and it fell to the floor, and the guy said, "Ah, you stepped on the eagle." And all of a sudden, he was arrested for treason, and now he faces who knows how many years in prison. And the lawyer wants to do a plea bargain, you know. He says he's doomed. And there's no rhyme, and there's no reason. So the Rebbe, Rebbe Nissim, called over. He said, "Let me speak to the lawyer." He says, "This may be a long shot, but with Siyata D'Shemaya, it may work." And what he did was, he went over to the judge toward the end of the trial, and the lawyer said, "How can I defend the person that steps on this, the Jew that steps on the eagle of our country? We all know who they are. They can just throw it on the floor." And the lawyer goes over to, you have to understand the Polish mentality. This was acceptable. Try to picture this in the courtroom. He goes over to the judge right beforehand. He takes out a box of like $50 cigars, Cuban cigars, and says, "Your Honor, that's the cover of the devil." And the lawyer shrieks. He goes, "Ah! What happened?" There was a picture of an eagle on the matchbox. And the judge just threw it onto the floor. So the judge said, "Ah, come on." And the lawyer said, "What about my client?" But just to give an idea of what went on over there. And that was the environment under those circumstances. You could have had great Talmidei Chachamim learning in the yeshivas, even though in Galicia and Poland there were the shtiblach more so than yeshivas. But if there's no one for them to marry, there would not be a Klal Yisrael. And Sarah Shnira saved that. Right? The Velt says, every great man, there is a surprise mother-in-law. No. To every great man, right, there's a woman. And there's no woman, there's no great man. She gave up her life. She never had children. I think she had a very short marriage. But the point was that she was mocked by the right and the left. Meaning to say, there were kanoim that said, "Who's this? The reform, new thing, new idea, what's this? Girls, unheard of, girls' schools," they threw stones at her. This came from the Frumah Chevra. And a stone hit her on the head. She wanted the stone. They said, "Why, you want to throw it back?" She said, "No, she wants this to be the Evan Hapina. She wants this to be the cornerstone of the first Beis Yaakov building." Because, you know, you get hit by the communists, that's one thing with Iraq. Get hit by the Frumah Chevra. But of course she had her backers, and the Chavetz Chaim backed her, and the Imri Emes, the Ger Rebbe backed her, and her brother brought her to the Belzer Rav, Rav Yisachar Daiv, and he told her, "Bracha Natzlach," and her brother was almost shocked. Evan Malasi Abonim Hasel Reish Pina. You told me a story, or maybe I read it somewhere, I'm not sure, that during the war, the Germans marched them from place to place, and they had to knock down monuments and turn them into concrete for roads, and there was one monument that was pouring late at night, and they were zetzing it, and zetzing it, it refused to break. Until the axe broke twice, the German just said, "Move on." And the Yidden were determined to go back and see who it was. So with great risk to their life, they ran back. And in the pouring rain, they washed off the monument. And they saw it was Sarah Shnira. Right? This same stone. Stone gets thrown at her head, you throw in the towel. That's it. You don't want Hashem as Nish. What are you throwing stones at me for? This is your chevra, and the Frum, look who's throwing the stones at me. But she didn't look at it that way. She said, "Evan Moasu Habayim Hoysel Roish Pina." The stone that was repulsed by the builders, that's going to be the Roish Pina. She used that as the cornerstone for her building, and you know, her stone can't be touched. The Svarim HaKadoshim bring that Adam HaRishon did more damage with his reaction to the Chet Eitz Hadas than the Chet Eitz Hadas itself. Here, Adam HaRishon tried to hide from Hashem. He blamed his wife. He was the first one to do so. Beginning of many tradition amongst men. Chazal tell us for 130 years he was Pirish Then he turned around and started doing tshuva. But the tshuva mashma was for 130 years, he separated himself from his wife. So the question was whether he had then neglected the mitzvah of Aina. And Chazal tell us about the shadim that were created over. And conversely, the opposite of that is David HaMelech. David took full responsibility for his chait with Bathsheba, even though it was looked upon that here he went and took an Eshes Ish, a married woman for himself. And again, David was attacked by everybody, the left and the right of him. And in his tshuva, David HaMelech takes full responsibility. David understood that he went into the abyss to pave the way for tshuva. Tzaddik says, in a way, what David HaMelech did for us is greater than that of Yosef HaTzaddik. Yosef HaTzaddik paved the way not to be chote. David HaMelech paved the way, even after you fall into the ditch, to be able to take out. And in David HaMelech's crying for tshuva, he asks Hashem for Ruach HaKadosh. Whoa, Ruach HaKadosh, take it easy. You know, be happy if Hashem says, Amaychli. But David says, no, in tshuva you can be zoiche to much higher madregas. And in a sense, David was mesak in the chet of Adam Arishon, because Adam, as you know, is Adam David Mashiach, Adam having given away 70 years of his own life for David HaMelech. 70, right. So Tzaddikim say like this, that the Yetzer Hara, the Shlo HaKadosh says, I think we've mentioned this, that Kadosh Baruch Hu sits down with Adam Arishon, Kavi Yachal, so to speak, shows him all the generations till Mashiach comes. You hear? Moshe Bukhorsky, you were there. Hashem showed him you. Moshe Seifer, Hashem showed you to Adam Arishon. Hilly, everybody, Hashem showed you to Adam Arishon. We were there. And when he got to David HaMelech, so Adam said, oh, yeah, 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 what's with David HaMelech? He's going to be nifty when he's a baby. So Adam would give away 70 years of his own life. Now, the Shlo HaKadosh says an amazing thing. In Sefer Tehillim, you have the tzaris of all the Yid. Any possible tzar that a Yid could have, you say Tehillim, David was there. David had you in mind. That's why David had to be of a neshama that saw every single generation until Mashiach comes. That's why instead of giving David HaMelech independent years, his years had to be that of Adam HaRishon. Because no one more so, that's the Shlo HaKadosh says this, there's no one more so than Adam HaRishon that saw everything, every single generation until Mashiach comes. And when you open up a Tehillim, Adam, besides that David went through every conceivable problem in the world that Shaykh to go through, from being sick, from having his children going off the Derech, his father-in-law tried to kill him. A lot of people have trouble with their father-in-law. He might just threw a spear at him. You know what I mean, his wife taken from him, sickness, accused of doing the worst of everything. You name it, David HaMelech went through it. His brothers, you know, he was the child that was left out, that was chased after, that wasn't considered legitimate to some level. So in Tehillim, you have every conceivable sorrow that a person can possibly have. David says, I was there. That's why he had to be part of Adam HaRishon, part of Adam HaRishon's tikkun. So the Velt says like this, that the Yetzer Hara gets much more mileage on the hopelessness you have after an Aveira than the Aveira itself. You're coming into El and you're saying, oh yeah, yeah, I know what I looked at last year. I know what I did last year. I know what I forget it. You know, forget about it. This year I'm doomed. And the Yetzer Hara, or Yetzer Hara does a better job. What's the point of me trying, right? Eat and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. Take upon Esau's Shita and say, well, if I'm going to get Gehenna anyway, I may as well enjoy myself down here in this world. Doesn't work that way. Right? Because the Baruch Hashem, right? The Vilna Gaon once told someone who was smoking on Shabbos and doing some terrible Aveira with someone, and he said, you know, so there's two Gersois in the story. One Gersi said, you're not worried about Bittul Torah, and the other Gersi says, you know, you didn't wash my Machronim this morning. Because my Machronim, I didn't wash, and make brachas, and bench. I'm going to tell you what I did. He says, so you think you're not going to get, only the frum guys and the learning Mishnah Berurah, he's going to get punished for not washing Mayim Achrayim? He said, well, get to the Mayim Achrayim too. But this guy said right before he died, he said, please give me a ham sandwich. I said, why? He said, because in Shemayim, they're going to keep hitting me for Aveira after Aveira. It'll be Ein Sof. This way I know when I get to that ham sandwich, I know it's over. You know, let me do it. He says, we're accountable for everything. But the Sutton loves to say there's no point in trying because you blew it. He loves to get us right afterwards. And that was Adam Rishon's mistake. And the tikkun of David HaMelech is, no, from wherever I am, I turn around. So here's this story. There was the tzaddik, the Sarah from Magalatsia. And the one year there was no Esrik to be found. They're looking all over the place. There is no Esrik to be found. And there's a rich person in the city. He has an Esrik. So Chassidim, being Chassidim, went and said, sell us the Esrik for our Rebbe. He said, one condition. That this year I have a ben zachar, I have a male child. And he made a tanai kafel, tanai koidim lamais, all of the halachis of conditions are set. If I don't have a ben zachar this year, then the Esrog was never the Rebbe's to start with. So retroactively, he was not Yotze the Mitzvah of Esrog. So the Chassidim said, no problem, the Rebbe will promise you a child. Notice that they on the Rebbe's Cheshem, right? In Yiddish, there's an expression, Yenem Spitter is going to Shmir. With someone else's butter, you shmir a lot. It shmirs a lot easier than with your own butter. It's later. That's how it is. I remember once I had an uncle of mine took me to the dentist. The dentist said, okay, it's a small cavity. You think he needs a shot? No, he doesn't. I don't. Don't tell me he doesn't. So they say, yeah, the Rebbe will promise you a Ben Zachar, no problem. So they bring the Esrog to the Rebbe. The Rebbe is, seventh heaven. Well, an Esrog. And a year like this, what a nice Esrog. And the next morning, as he's about to make the bracha, they come over to him and they say, ah, Rebbe. There's one thing we forgot to tell you. Actually, we didn't forget, but it's conditional. The Rebbe was very, very upset. And he said to them, what right did you have to make this condition? And they said, we didn't. And they were very upset. Very, very upset. And the Rebbe was not happy. He put the Esrog down. And back and forth and back and forth, moments before the sun sets, the Rebbe says, okay. The Rebbe says, give me the Esrog quickly. And he made a bracha on it right before Shkia. And indeed, that person had a son. So what happened? What changed? It was a terrible thing what these Chassidim did. What are you doing? What are you promising on the Rebbe's Cheshbon? What a mess. What do I do with this Esrog now? Make a bracha. Don't make a bracha. Use it. Don't use it. Fine. It was a mess. Your brother shouldn't have done it. Your wife shouldn't have said it. Your husband shouldn't have said it. Your mechutin shouldn't have said it. This is what it is now. Right now, it's the second before Shkia, and this is the only Esrog available. This is what it is now. Fine. We'll move on. At this point, we move on, and we say, Rabbeinu Shalom, wherever it is, it has to be, wherever your position is now, at the point you want to do tshuva, the very blotter, it says, the very mud, enhances the tshuva. Sara Shneira took an impossible situation. She was macked all over, and she was zeichet to be a game saver. She was zeichet, and her motto was clothes for a guf. And you have to have clothes for your neshama. That's what we have to think about. So there's a story in the Rav Moshe book. I forgot the name of the person, but there was a man that was supposed to went over to a yid and said, listen, I have promised to drive someone in from the country tomorrow. By the way, for those of you, we in New York, we call country the Catskill Mountains. Don't ask me why. Who did I hear this from? He told me he's driving on the highway and someone pulls up next to him. He says, where are you coming from? He says, Kim Yatsen, St. Louis. He says, V St. Louis. He says, 20 mul the country, okay? 20 times going to the country. How else can I explain it to you? Is that good for you? So he says, Ramesha said, where am I here? So he says, I promised to drive someone in to the Sunday morning. He says, can you do it? So he says, fine, no problem. This man is just, he just come from Hungary, in 1956. And he pulls up and he says, knocks on the bungalow door. He says, I'm supposed to take you to the city. He sees this man comes out with like a rectangle yarmulke. He's holding his hat in his hand. And he sits down, a short man and smiley face. And he says to him, they start driving. And this man says to him, what do you do? He says, I'm from Hungary and I started a business now. He says, very nice. And the man says, what's your business? He says, I produce metal. And he turns to this man and says, what's your name? And the man says, my name is Moshe Feinstein. He says, what do you do? He says, I try to teach Torah to kids. And Moshe starts telling him, you produce metal, right? What's the metal? Metal, you make metal for a plane? There has to be a neshama. There has to be a... Every metal has to have a point. It supports something. It supports a bridge. It's a tunnel. It does something. It creates something. He says, something has to be on the inside or else the metal is no purpose. He says, my job is also the same way. He says, there has to be a purpose to life. And the purpose to life is our neshama that lasts forever. And that's what I work on. The man was like, they went over before they knew it, they were crossing the Williamsburg Bridge and Ramesha showed him where to go. He said, come up for a cup of coffee and they became friends. And later he found out who Ramesha was. But Ramesha is sitting with this person. He didn't have to talk to him. He could have just said thanks and looked into his safer the entire time. And Chavetz Chaim is riding on a wagon, and there's a balagola there, and he says to him, what do you do? He goes, I'm a wagon driver. He says, you want to learn? The guy says, I never learned in my life. And Chavetz Chaim says, now's a good time to start. They start Me'emes, Sekeren, and Shaman. They're learning Mesechtos Brachos again and again. Because Rabbi Hashem, if you put me here, this is what I have to do now. You made this shidduch. So the Kayin Gadol comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim alive, which was a big chiddush. and everyone is applauding. Wow, the Kohen Gadol came out alive. Amazing. We didn't think this was going to happen. Yay. And thousands are coming. Kamari Eni Akoyen. And along comes Shemaya Naftalian. Who was Shemaya Naftalian anyway? They were from the two leaders of Klal Yisrael in their time, right? Hillel and Shammai were Talmidim of Shemaya Naftalian, right? They were also Geirim. They were converts. And the Kohen Gadol made some derogatory comment about them, like, you guys stay away from me. So they said, better us that do the avoid of Aaron HaKayan as opposed to you, the Kohen Gadol, who doesn't do the avoid of Aaron HaKayan. Pashtus, what it means is, you know, Aaron HaKayan is Oyev Shalom, but right of Shalom, and you're over a primary halacha of Einoas Dvarim that you make fun of someone where he comes from and so on. There's a Tifavar. It's Shemaya Naftalian, the Maggid says, my father used to share this with me. You know, they said, this Kohen Gadol bought his way. Okay, Hanum Gedolim in the times of the second base of Mikdash paid for their position. They paid for their job. That's how they got it. It wasn't what you know, it was how much money you had. And they bought their way. This Kohen Gadol didn't deserve to be the Kohen Gadol. It says, Rav Chanina Skana Kehanim, right? You know what the Mishnah of Chanina Skana, what does Skana Kehanim mean? He's the assistant to Kehanim. The assistant becomes Kohen Gadol afterwards. The vice president becomes Kohen Gadol, right? You don't stay vice president. They say Joe Lieberman's wife, you know, she said to him when they lost the election, don't worry, in my house you will always be the vice president. That's what they said. But normally the vice president becomes the president. So why was he Rav Chanina Skana Kehanim? So Rav Meir Shapiro explains, because the Kohen Gadol was a big Am Haaretz. He didn't have a clue what to do. He didn't know the difference between Kmitza and Zrika. You know, the first thing, he didn't know the difference between Yevamis and Moitzi Mechavei Olav Araya and, you know, Shechidasa B'Tzof. He didn't have no idea what was going on here. So Rav Chanina had to stand up. No, Shech. No. Not by the tail, by the neck. No. No, that's the Mizbeach. No. That's the Kier. That's the Mizbeach. The other, turn around the other way. So they left Rav Chanina in this position. They say the State Department, they have like Defense Department, they all have these like steadies because they're the ones, the president appoints somebody new. And these are the guys, the career diplomats that tell them what to do. So he was Rav Chanina Skana Koyhanim. He was the Skan to every Koyan. So you would think that Rav Chanina would have it out for the Malchus because they're so corrupt, he stays Skan. So the Chiddush is, even Rav Chanina Skana Koyhanim said, have a mispal b'shloimish shel Malchus. But being as it may be, So here's the thing. So Shemaya Naftalian did the avoid of the Kohen Gadol. They said they were mechaven all the kavanas. The Kohen Gadol had no right to be. You don't belong there. What are you pushing yourself to be Kohen Gadol for? Covet, you don't belong there. But he says, I'm not happy with who I am. I got to be the Kohen Gadol. Shemaya Naftalian could have said, hey, we're Geirim. You know what? We're happy to let us into the Beis Hamedrash. Instead, Shemaya Naftalian say, no, we're very happy who we are. And the Rabbanu Shem says, I love people who are happy who they are. And they become the leaders of Klal Yisrael. They're part of a main station, a main base in the link of the chain of the Messiah of Torah. So they say to the Kohen Gadol, we're doing Uvda the Aaron. Aaron is the one that says, I'm happy who I am. Not you. So they say this guy's walking and he's very upset. His son, he doesn't get it. His son is in yeshiva, trying to teach him. It's not happening. Tutors and try and get and try and schlep. Nothing's doing. Kid can't remember for once. He forgets. Teach the words, he forgets. Teach the words, learn a Mishnah, he forgets. And he's schlepping this kid, he's so angry. And there's an Arab selling watermelon. And the Arab is saying, you know, fresh fruit, avatechem, right, fresh pits, you know, sweet like sugar, you know. And the kid is repeating the whole memra. Fresh watermelon, no pits, sweet like sugar. Right. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, they sell watermelon pits. People, like pumpkin seeds, they sell watermelon pits. You ever saw this? Yeah, what's it called? Yeah. Yeah, I don't like them because I imagine how they produce them. Yeah, just have imagined they have like 60 people biting into a watermelon. Right? Then they sell those pits. I don't know exactly. How do they get those pits? I don't know. Anyway, so this guy turns around and he slaps the kid up. He goes, this Arab is selling watermelon. He has a 20-minute, you know, commercial and you remember every single word he said in the Mishnah you don't remember? So I forgot who it was. It's a true story. One of the big famous Yishalayim that anyone knows. What'd you slap your kid up for? He tells him, a Mishnah he can't remember. But that this Arab is selling watermelon, that he remembers. And you try to teach. Yeah, I try to teach him. So he said, if you would teach him with the same level of sincerity that this Arab has about his watermelons, he would remember it also. Maybe the chesaron is in you. He said, let the kid Let the kid be a kid. And really, the more heart there is in something, the more you want in a neshama to fill up the clothes, the more there's a kiyum for something. Right? A guy knocks at someone's door, he says, we're collecting to make a community pool. Can you donate something? So he comes out and brings him a cup of water. No, he doesn't need a cup of water. You know? How does the story go? The guy, you know, collecting for an orphanage, he gives him two kids. You know, that's... What you want to do, l'shem shemayim, what you want should have a kiyum, requires mesiris nefesh. I was listening to an interview. Somebody asked the politician, give me something that you have a tough stance on, even though it's against popular opinion, but it's right, and you're going to take that position anyway. And the guy goes, I'm for world peace, feeding the hungry, equal employment. I said, you didn't get my question, did you? Right? Chavetz Chaim, when he was a little boy, so the kids played a prank. There was a Wasserträger, a water carrier. They didn't like the guy. So they figured at night, they're going to fill up his buckets with water. It's going to freeze overnight. It'll come the next morning, it'll be solid ice. He'll never get the ice out. And when Chavetz Chaim, it wasn't called Chavetz Chaim when he was a little boy, but it wasn't called Chavetz Chaim, it'll come here, it didn't work. His name was Yisrael Meir. He told the boys not to do it. They threatened him. So he got up in the middle of the night, went out, and went over to the water before it froze, and he poured it out so that the guy should have it. Understand? So try, let's ask ourselves a question. We want to prepare for Rosh Hashanah. Is there one thing we can do a day which is not necessarily popular? It's not going to get us any brownie points. We're not going to get a picture in the Hamadiyah that we did this. But we're doing it because we in our minds, to the best of our ability, the Rabbeinu Shalom wants us to do it. Okay? So, I once got in trouble. I said this someplace, and the guy calls me up. He tells me this story. He says he's in shul in the morning, and some people come, they drink a coffee, and they leave over a half coffee on the table. And the shamus comes in, he's so angry. It's disgusting. So he decided, that's it. The next time someone does that, I'll take all the coffees and pour them out so the shamus has no agnus nefesh. So this yid comes in, he sits down with a coffee, he walks out, the guy takes the coffee and pours it out. He walks in and goes, why did you spill my coffee? He comes back. He went to wash his hands or something. So I told him, listen, it's very nice you're going around spilling out coffees, but I have a better idea for you, okay? Why don't you learn with a shvacha kid? Oh, daddy doesn't have time for it. Oh, you want to spill coffees, right? An act of mesiras nefesh. Little bit of mesiras nefesh. To show that we believe, to show we have emunah. Today is the yard site, or was the yard site, of Rabbi Yaakov Kapel Chassid, who was the Baal Tefillah of the Baal Shem Tov, the vision of the dynasty, comes from him. And he once said like this, he said, what's the meaning of the tefillah, al tatzricheinu l'dei matnas basa v'dam? He says, why not? Because Baruch Hu, every person gives and takes, what's so bad? We get matnas bas of adam. And the Velt says about, you know, the chasen, by the chasen, he davens, he shouldn't feel bas of adam. When someone gives him shalom aleichem, there should be an envelope there in the middle. But, or I can't. What's so bad? Bas of adam. So he says like this, when a person is maimed that his money comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he wants to be a conduit of bracha, and he gives you the money, that money leads to simchas achayim. When a person believes that the money is his, and God has nothing to do with it, like the Balagola that said, you know, if God doesn't stop us, we can go from Varsha to whatever, to Ger in 2 hours, whatever it was. He says, Al tatzricheinu l'dei matnas basa v'dam, to a person that believes. I don't want to get my money from a person who believes it's his money. I want to get my money from a person that believes that he's a conduit of bracha, and as a result, that money will bring bracha into my life. He was this Yaakov Kapel Chassid. You can imagine he was the Baal Shem Tov's Baal Tefillah. So he used to stand in the marketplace, he would sell shmatas. And when someone would come over to him, and in my days, I mean, everyone used to be in shmatas. It used to be a big thing, textiles. Today, the only one that knows the word shmatas is the cleaning lady. But, yeah. But, so he said, when somebody would come over to him and ask, how much is this shmata, that's what he would do. He would close his eyes, he would go, Shavisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid, you know, 10 groshen. Because he didn't want to think for a moment that he's making money. And so much so that the local peasants, even the non-Jew, they called him the Shavisinik. Where's the Shavisinik? Where is he? So the end of Parshas Kiseitse, it says, Evan Shleim of a Tzedek Yilach. You should have honest scales. Rashi says, if you have honest scales, you're going to have a lot. Wait a second, says Ramesh. I thought if you give Meiser, you have a lot. So Ramesh explains like this. If you give Meiser, you have a lot. But if you're not honest, you don't have a Keli. If you're not honest, you have a big hole at the bottom of your bucket. And because bracha give you bracha, but it doesn't help if it comes right out of the hole. He says, you have to be honest, and then you can give tzedakah, and Hashem gives you bracha through the tzedakah. But without being honest, what's the point of giving tzedakah? The bracha has no place no place to be chal. And Rav Moshe, that's what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says, and that's true for Atzlach in Torah also. If you're not honest in your Torah, if you're looking to knock somebody else, he says there's no place for the bracha to be chal. Where does it take effect? How does it work? So the story goes that Rav Yaakov Kapel's chassid son, or Einikel, the chassid of a Rebbe, he's so poor. He mamash doesn't have lechem lechem. They're such a happy family. And every Friday night, his wife says, bring home a guest. There was nothing in the house to eat. And everyone said, don't go there. There's no food there. They don't have anything. So nobody went because there was no food. One day this guy comes into town. His horse got stuck somewhere. And he goes running and he comes into town late into the night. And it's already Friday night and there's only one person still davening in the shul. And he says to me, the Kasav Rebbe says to him, you want to come to me? Yeah. And he comes to him. He walks inside. He sees the house. He goes, oh no, the guy's want to have food for himself. What am I doing here? And they sit down on this excuse of a table. They sit down. One kid is sitting on a barrel. Another kid is sitting. Everything is covered. Look, covered Shabbos. And he makes Kiddush. And he has a tiny, tiny drop of wine. He apologizes. He asks me, you might see him with Kiddush. No problem. And they bring in the challahs. What's the challah? Two little bundlach, two little chickpeas. Challah. Challah. But that's up. You know, I'm not sure if he made a moitzi or whatever, and he gives them the challah. Here, take from the challah. Right. Whatever you say, you know, imagination is a good thing. And he bites into this challah, and he goes, this is good stuff. Lechem levav enesh yisah. He feels good. You know, they sing mirrors, they bring out the fish. They bring the fish, one little bundle, one little chickpea, flying around the thing. Fish, Lekavit Shabbos. Oh, you sure it has fins and scales? If not, it's not kosher, you know. And he's like, takes the fork and knife and like, some crane? No. What's the crane? Some little part of a chickpea. Okay. And he starts eating it. He goes, wow! You know, he likes fish, but this fish, whoa, this fish like, boom, it was so geschmack. Never had anything so geschmack in my life. Then comes the soup, you know. What's the soup? A little chickpea flying around. It's, picks up a fork. They go, you eat soup with a fork? Oh, sorry, you know. And he takes the spoon and he's trying to get it. And it's rolling around the bowl and he can't get it out. It's very hard to get a chickpea out with a spoon, you know. And that was the meat and that was the kugel and the potatoes and the kompot and the galaret and the zwiebelkugel and everything else, you know. He was so full, he says, like, he never felt so full in his life. By the time they finished Mirs, it was morning. And when he came there, he said, when he came to shul, he said, where'd you parachute in from? Where are you from? He says, I just had the Suda. Yeah, but you had the Suda by him, they have nothing. He says, they have nothing, they have everything. So he writes in his Sefer Taka that if you're Maimon Bamunah Shalema, whatever you have comes from Hashem, it fills you with bracha. Fills you with bracha. You have a sense of bracha, it fills you with bracha. And you're more happy. It fills you more than with anything else that you can have. And that's really the Hemshech HaPsukim. Shabbos, the Maranayim says, is the Neshama of the week. The end of Parshas Kiseis, it says you have to be honest. At the point you're honest, go to the next step. Hakaras HaTov. No one owes you nothing. Whatever you have is a gift from Hashem. You start giving Asa B'Shvil Shetus Asa. And then just put your life into the hands of the Rabbi Yishlam. He'll tell you where to go. So a beautiful story in the Ner of Torah. He says a guy goes to his Rebbe and says, Rebbe, should I buy the Schaira? Should I try to sell it? The roads are full of swamps. I should. So the Rebbe tells him, no, don't do it. Rebbe, he wanted to do it, so he goes to the next Rebbe. Right? That's what you do. If you don't like your Rebbe's answer, cancel the Rebbe. New Rebbe. Should I do it? Do it. Ah, the Rebbe said to do it. He buys his chayra, starts running, gets stuck in the mud. He's stuck in the mud. He says, woe is to me. I'm going to lose all my money. I'm done. I should have listened to the first Rebbe. Rebbe 1, you know, don't throw dice and say Rebbe 1 or Rebbe 2. And he starts crying and he's stuck in the mud for 3 days. I missed the mark. Then it turns out in that particular area where he was in the mud, there was a shortage of that thing. And he wound up selling it for a very big profit. So the David Leleva said like this. He said, one, besides the fact the guy was wrong for asking two Rebbes, he said one Rebbe was able to see till the blot, till the mud. He saw him get stuck in the mud. He told him not to do it. The other Rebbe was able to see past the mud. He was able to see how the mud is the bracha. So David Leleva said, in our lives, we only see until the mud. It can't be worse than I am now. No, there's life after this mud. There is life after this mud. The Arvei Nachal says, V'nosan Hashem l'cha, Hashem will give you lev, right? Part of the Teuchicha we read, your heart is going to worry. Says the Arvei Nachal, he brings some divina le'itim, your heart is a navi. You're very worried about something, you have a premonition of disaster, there's something to it. And if you're very happy, you feel a sense of simcha, there's something to it, right? Rechlina ben Doisa said, if I daven clearly, if I daven, the words flow from my mouth, then I know the person's going to be healed. I heard a story from a yid that told me the story himself. That he came to the Chavetz Chaim, and he asked for a bracha for his father, and the Chavetz Chaim couldn't say out the name of his father. And he gave him a bracha for his mother, for everyone else, but not for his father. It was known. If the Chavetz Chaim couldn't say, he said, if your heart is a Navi, your heart has a premonition of disaster, don't take that seriously. Your heart is a sense of simcha, take that seriously. So he says like this, the Arvi Nachal, Hillel is going! And right outside of the city, they hear screaming, help, help! And Hillel says, crying. He says, that's not from my house. It's not from my house. I know for sure it's not from my house. So how did Hillel know it's not from his house? And also, like this, Gemara has a question about a tefillah shav. Was he soimach on his chus? And also, Hillel is supposed to be the big anav. He says, nah, can't be my house. God would never do that to me. So some say, because he heard the way they were crying, they would say, we're doomed, we're finished, it's all over. Now Hillel taught his family, it's not the way you cry. You cry in tefillah, you don't cry in yish. So the Yavi Nacha says, good, but how does that explain the pasuk of, it's emes, how does it explain the pasuk of Mishmur Ra La Yiras? He says, Amar Dekhi Yisai. Hillel said like this, if I would have felt a fear if something bad was supposed to happen to my family. If I didn't feel it, it's a siman, it's not for my family. And if I would have felt a fear, I would have used that fear to be mispal Hashem. I feel something is coming. I'm taka scared. I beg of you, Hashem, please help me. So either way, it's not my family. Because if I would have felt the fear, I would have been mispal. I would have not felt the fear. I would have done where I am. So in conclusion, meet this yid yesterday of Shapsi Bolz, Alzang Gazitenstock. I taught with him at Tarva Das. I taught for 45 years. I said to him, Rav Shapsi, you have the most beautiful children. Most beautiful children. What's the schus? He says, the schus, pickles. I said, this I got to hear. What's with the pickles? He said his father, Tzvi, was here in America in those years, and he finally started to make it, and they offered him to be a partner in a concession to sell pickles in the Essex Street Market. You know where the Essex Street Market is? Essex Grand. I remember as a kid in the first technique. He said, okay, that was his chance, be a partner in a pickle, you know, store. And but no open, they said, it'll be open Shabbos. You don't have to work on Shabbos. The other partner will do the work on Shabbos. And he said, no way, Jose. Not doing it. Not doing it. And he mamish to say that he lost his parnasa. They said, well, you're not working. What's with you? You don't have to work on Shabbos. You worried about my neshama? He says, yep. So that's who I was zaycha to. So I said to him, and your father, Tzvi, why was he zaycha to do that? He says, his mother, Rechama. Hey, what's the story with his mother, Rechama? So he said, his grandfather, back home, was a very rich man. And Nebuch, all of his children passed away when they were young. And they decided, him and his wife, they had one daughter. The daughter wasn't doing too well. They went, they took in a yisayma to live with them as a scholar. What are you doing? You have your hands full. You're taking in a yisayma? They felt that was the way to go. And their daughter, Rechama, one night it was real bad, and the doctor said, looks like she's going to go the way of the other kids, and it's all over. And they were distraught and crying. And this guy comes pounding on the door, and the wife says, not now, you can't come now. This is a very serious time here. Let me in! You can't come now. He bangs the door in. And walks in, he starts screaming, he goes, you can't have everything. You want riches or you want the child? So the grandfather takes it back. He goes, what's the point of riches if I have no child? He walks out. He says, within a couple of days, two things happened. He lost all of his money and the child got better. He said, that's his grandmother, Racham. As grandfather said, you have to understand the Hashgach. Even that we had this choice of riches or a child only came after Mesiras Nefesh. See, we think Mesiras Nefesh is the soda machine. Right? He took any assignments. Of course, he lives happily ever after. He took it. It looks to us like we're being thrown to the mud. No. But the opportunity to crawl out of the mud, the way out, the decision, the bracha of the way out comes after Mesiras Nefesh. So again, a little bit in the month of El, they say there are storm systems in the Atlantic all the time. We don't know which ones develop, which ones don't develop. We don't know which storm systems are brewing for the next year. The Arvi Nachal says that if you take on the Shrek of it, an El, say, Rabban Shalom, I know it could come my way. Just help me now. Help me now. Do what I have to do. Correct what I have to do. Then you're Yotze with the Shrek. And we're Zoicha to the words of Hillel, who says, I know that the shouts are not coming from my house.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.